There are more bicycles on the streets of Anchorage than ever this year. At what point does the transportation planning start accommodating this increased traffic? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The cost of people-powered transportation is low. The health benefits are great. If you're a driver with observations about bicycles, we'd love to hear from you. Our number 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. It is Bike to Work Week on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
People-powered transportation, the subject today on Talk of Alaska, because it's, declared by Governor Sean Parnell, Bicycle Month. It is Bike to Work Week, designated by the Alliance for, the League of American Bicyclists. Yeah, I get confused sometimes because they were originally the League of American Wheelmen, and they were actually around before automobiles were invented. But the League of American Bicyclists also certifies bicycle-friendly communities. And we'd like to hear from you and your views on this, whether it's from the combustion side of things or the good intentions side of things, people that are considering bicycling but nervous about this or that, or people who have made the leap and do it, perhaps do it year-round, perhaps just do it on bike-to-work day. What have been your adventures? What are your observations? And mostly, the question of design. How do we design things so that we can use all these different modes of transportation? Because right now, it's pretty clearly not built for that, and it's expensive. It would be expensive to be changing the way that snow is cleared off of bike paths to make them more clear. I think there's good efforts being done, but still it would be difficult and it would cost money. The Congress is in the midst of trying to find a way to renew the highway bill. This is important. There's billions of dollars in federal fuel taxes that go into what is supposed to be, it was originally called the Highway Trust Fund, but now they use it for all sorts of transportation. And so Congress is once again thinking maybe it will try and renew this. It hasn't been renewed for a number of years. The last bill was actually a product of Don Young's work in the Transportation Committee in 2005. So it's overdue by several years, and it's kind of a gridlock Congress this year, but this might be something that they might be able to come up with that would be a sign of progress. But we're more here to talk about it from the point of view of two wheels or pedestrians or combustion vehicles, road design, bike path design, and all that sort of thing. Because we've got a ways to go, and we got a whole lot of different things to talk about. Last week in Anchorage, Alaska Trails, the State Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, and Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage had a workshop, an Advocacy Advance workshop, which basically was designed to accommodate the various types of users beyond combustion in getting their share of the transportation budget, because they don't. The money is there, but they don't necessarily use it. In the state of Alaska, there is $8 million set aside since 2005 in the the Safe Routes to Schools program, and we've used about 1.5 million of it in the state of Alaska. And there was also last year $10 million in alternative transportation money that was rescinded back to the federal government because the state hadn't found any way to spend it yet. So the proposals need to come forth to the people who do the transportation planning. It could be difficult. It can be cumbersome. They have these AMATs. They have these agencies. They have this STIP. They have all sorts of jargon and engineering lingo and ways that they approach these things. But in essence, if people don't advocate for it, it ain't going to happen. And so that's what I found out when I interviewed a couple of people who were conducting that workshop last week.
My name is Darren Fluchet, Policy Director for the League of American Bicyclists.
I'm Bridget O'Keen, Advocacy Advance Program Manager for the Alliance for Biking and Walking.
How long has the League existed?
The League was founded as the League of American Wheelmen in 1880, and it was responsible for what's known as the Good Roads Movement. So I saw someone on Twitter today say that if you drive your car on a paved road, thank a cyclist, because the League of American Bicyclists, League of American Wheelmen, really was responsible for drawing attention to the need for paved roads.
How long has it been now? You probably know this then. How long has it been since the federal highway bill started mandating some other uses besides cars?
The first time that bicycling and walking were really integrated and made eligible uses for federal funds was in 1992 under the law at the time was called ICE-T. The I stands for intermodal, and they made a concerted effort to integrate bicycling and walking into federal programs so that they were at least eligible. And then since then, it's been sort of a battle to make sure that agencies are actually doing that and making sure that they're spending the money that they can spend on bicycling and walking projects.
What is the Alliance for Biking and Walking?
We work very closely with all of our members on the ground on both organizational development and campaign development for increasing biking and walking.
Enabling them to be more effective and know where all the money might be available for these programs and share some best practices. This is great to hear because I want to know about some best practices. Can you give me, like, let's say, two examples that are not Portland?
How about Peoria? The old adage that if it plays in Peoria, it'll play across the country. And that's one of the examples that we share and I really enjoy. I think it's a perfect example of how transportation agency staff and bicycling advocates can work together to improve the planning and building process. What they did was the folks at the Metropolitan Planning Organization decided that they were going to revise the application for major road projects. And they decided on their own that they wanted to incorporate some points on the application. Out of 100 points, they wanted to dedicate some points to bicycling and walking. So if you include a sidewalk, if you include a bike lane, your project is more likely to get funded. And so they said, well, we don't really know what to value. And so they approached the League of Illinois Bicyclists, a gentleman there named Ed Barsotti, who was the executive director, and said, Ed, help us figure out how to spread out the points for bike and walking projects. And so he said, okay, he talked to his executive director, his board, and said, you know, something like, you know, 2 points for sidewalks on both sides, some points for parallel bike lanes or bike path and pedestrian crosswalk safety and things like that, put together a proposal. They looked at it and said, that sounds about right, incorporated it, and put that on the application. So if you were an agency and you proposed a project that didn't include those things, the most you were going to get were 90 points on the application. So overnight, these agencies are smart. They know a lot of money is at stake for these expensive projects. And they went from hardly having any of those facilities in proposed projects 1 year. The next year, 99% had all of a sudden trails, sidewalks, bike lanes, and so forth. And it doesn't necessarily even add a lot to the cost of the project to incorporate a little extra space for bicyclists and what you're going to build anyway. But it does a lot for accommodating folks who are looking for those kind of facilities. And so that's just something that, you know, the advocates and the agency staff worked as allies, really, to figure out the best way to produce that application, and it made a world of difference.
Okay, so if I went to Peoria now, what would I see?
Well, what you would see is on any major road project of the past few years that used those federal dollars, that's really what they were talking about, you would see bike lanes, and you would see sort of closer to this notion of complete streets, which is the idea that you design and build your roads for all road users.
Are they being used? I know, for instance, when they started taking the railroad corridors and turning them into bike trails, what a success. All of a sudden, people that had never thought about riding bikes, they were all over this thing. Families, picnics, the whole deal. It was a fabulous success, a great success story. What about Peoria? Are they using these?
Yeah, I think, I don't have the commuter mode share numbers off the top of my head for Peoria, but there certainly have seen an uptick in bicycling there across the state of Illinois and really across the country. We've seen a 40% increase in bicycle commuting since 2000, and it's closer to 77-80% in what the league calls bicycle-friendly communities, communities that have applied for recognition for doing all the things that we suggest that you do to become more bicycle-friendly. And the increase in bicycling in those communities has really shot through the roof. It dwarfs everywhere else who hasn't made those investments.
So then that, in turn, would pay benefits, that I would assume that there would be a lot of things once you get people accustomed to this, that there's a lot of dividends, not just health, but other things as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing it, the health benefits, just active living for all ages. So really roads that are designed for young children and the elderly to be able to commute safely and get to where they need to go. And then economic benefits. A lot of communities that we work with, the more that they bring in bicycle infrastructure and pedestrian infrastructure, the more people are outside and interacting with the local businesses and local communities. And we've really seen our revitalization in many neighborhoods and cities across the country, and businesses that are able to profit from people riding their bikes more and getting out and engaging in the communal streets more.
In Anchorage and really even Fairbanks and Sitka, some other places in Alaska, I would say that the bicycling community in the last couple of years has gotten way more organized and shown itself to be, to have some political force in terms of being able to turn out numbers to meetings and stuff like that. But that doesn't always mean that they get the result that they might be seeking, because a lot of these are like, these are long-term things. If you look at the way that a highway overpass or a road is being planned, these things are thought of as icing on the cake. It's very hard to get all of our engineering firms, all our consulting firms, to look at this in terms of anything other than the existing plan, which I guess there's federal law that dictates how you plan for traffic, and it's based on how people drove around in Texas at one time. And the result of that is that they come up with all these dreams of all these giant highways that are needed for traffic that's not there yet, but they think is going to be there based on this computer model that has essentially gotten 9 or 10 years out of date, as near as I can tell. And they still have that almost in their genetic code, it seems, in the engineering business and in the consulting business that does the planning processes for all these. So the bicycle people I know, they don't know how to deal with this culture. Got any tips for them?
One thing that we really emphasize through these Action 2020 workshops is that collaborative partnerships. So advocates have a vital role in getting projects on the ground and helping to show the political will for changing certain strategies as far as funding or planning. But it really ties into agency staff who have the knowledge and expertise that they know the process. And then, of course, the key of elected officials who can really lay the priority for the community. So what we focus on is knowing those partners and working together, taking advantage of opportunities to collaborate. But really, as an advocate, to understand who the decision makers are and to really focus on those key decision points and how the elected officials can work with the local agencies to say this is what the community wants and this is what we need to prioritize at the local level.
So in a way, by the time it gets to the consultant, it's almost too late. That it's how what orders are actually given to these consultants.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They respond to their directive from the agency, and the agency responds to really public officials who are ultimately their boss. So the best thing that bicycling advocates can do is make sure that their voices are heard by elected officials.
There's a term I learned when I started going to these meetings, and it was context sensitive. Oh, you know about that. Yeah, and that sounded like a really great idea. But I found that the solutions were not much better than the problems so far.
Well, yeah, part of the problem with the context-sensitive solution is if the current context is no one walks, no one rides, and there's the appearance that there's nothing around, then your context-sensitive solution can basically be, well, we'll fit the context, which is crummy for bicycling and walking. So that is a concept that I think was well-meaning and effective. It had its place. But we sort of more talk about this complete streets notion, that you start with the assumption that the roads are going to be used by everybody and you figure out how to make it safe and comfortable for everyone, and you go from there. Yeah, I mean, just to speak to your earlier point about the engineers, I think it used to be that when you were graduating from the degree in engineering, the best thing that you could do was build a bridge, right? That was the pinnacle of engineering, showing your skills. I don't think we're there yet, but I think we're getting to a point where people are beginning to realize that what can be more popular than a bridge is a bike trail, is a bike path. There's a famous story of a road crew who was painting a bike lane, I think it was in Minneapolis, and before they were done striping the lane, there was a cyclist on it. A family stopped them and said, "I'd like to thank you for building this. This is great." And the construction worker said, "I've never been stopped on the road and thanked for doing anything before, you know, but I'm painting this bike lane and people are literally stopping me and thanking me for doing my job." And I think there's a sense that planners coming out of planning school, I mean, every day, every month we get calls, how can I get your job, right? How can I do what you're doing, planning and promoting bicycling? And so there is beginning to be a little bit of a prestige around that, accommodating everybody. It's something that has taken a while for us to get there, but we've pretty much built up many of our cities. And now the question is, how are we going to fit everybody who is going to be there over the next 10 years? We're going to see huge population growth, and we're not all going to be accommodated by roads.
And that is Darren Fluché, policy analyst for the League of American Bicyclists, and Bridget O'Keen, program manager for the advocacy advance effort of the Alliance for Biking and Walking, recorded last week as they were doing their workshop in Anchorage, training people for advocacy, for getting at the money that's already available federally for bicycle-friendly projects. It's Bike to Work Week. What do you make of that? 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. Sitka yesterday became the first Alaska community to earn a bicycle-friendly community. In 2008, Sitka was the first bike-friendly community. And yesterday, it became the first Alaska community to earn a renewal of that designation, according to this press release out of Sitka today. So it kind of was time to kick off National Bike to Work Week. And the other two bike-friendly communities in Alaska, certified by the League of American Bicyclists, are Anchorage in 2009 and Juneau in 2011. So there's now 214 communities in 47 states with bicycle-friendly community designations at the platinum, gold, and silver levels. And they note in Sitka that they are very proud of the fact that they have boosted that ratio that was being talked about there by Darren, that commuter mode share thing, to where they have something like 4%, I think, of their 4.9%, nearly 10 times the national average of people in Sitka are now regular bike commuters. Growing in Anchorage, too, I think. Tom of Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you for letting me on the program. About 40 years ago, one of our leaders, I believe it might have been the current mayor's father, George Sullivan, Mayor George Sullivan, was talking up Anchorage and talking about how we were going to have bike trails from the mountains to the sea. We've kind of made it in the ways, and we have a fairly good network that has been built over the years slowly and sometimes put off in the name of we need to get the roads done first. How to tie the system together is a real question, and probably the most effective means would be to build a trail on the edge of the Alaska Railroad right-of-way, a 200-foot-wide strip of land that runs from Potter Marsh right into the railway yard.
Oh man, what an idea! Have you pushed this at all,
oh,
Tom?
Yes. Yeah, over the years, and currently it's kind of off the books completely, but it's even been guesstimated priced a few times, and with grade separations over the roads and crossings over the trail or over the rail, either under or over, it's not inexpensive. I mean, it's not a small project at all, but it, when you start looking at the more than a dozen and a half, two dozen trails that it crosses, Campbell Creek, Fish Creek, Tudor Trail, C Street, Clatt, it would tie together the two ends of the yet-to-be-built coastal trail. It is the coastal trail once it gets to Westchester Lagoon. It ties to the Ship Creek Trail. It's just an incredible thing that really, as to quote the Big Lebowski, really ties the town together. And anyway, it would be a wonderful project. The railway almost reflexively objects to anything in their right-of-way that they can't carry. That's why there's only telephone lines and power lines. But this would really be to their advantage if the trail is built well and wide and the bridge is tough so that fire engines and emergency vehicles can get on it. It would be possible to deal with a derail of the, say, a chemical spill or something like that on the railway. It would get the, once every 5 or 10 years somebody gets run over by the train because they're walking on the tracks, it might all but eliminate that hazard, particularly if a fence is built between the trail and the rail line.
I can just hear Ernie Piper freaking out right now and saying, oh, safety, wait a minute, safety, don't you understand safety?
No, but trains can drag things and trains can do stuff. If some poor fellow is on the trail when the railway derails, they're bug splat, and that's a real shame, and there's liability, and but that is also incredibly rare. And the tying together of the town, crossing and connecting all these different trails would provide a commuter route for an awful lot of people, or at least part of their route, and would make a real difference. And it's a significant, it's a scale project. I mean, we're talking tens of millions. I really can't estimate off the top of my head.
Yeah. How long has this idea been around, do you know, Tom?
Well, I've been pushing it for probably 30-some years, 35 years or more. I tried to be a bike trail coordinator under Mayor Knowles, but my application always seemed to fall through the cracks and disappear. and I don't want to do gripes. I mean,
no.
If we're going to talk idealistically about trails, it would really be nice to have the connection to the mountains, to get Ship Creek Trail finished from Mountain View, not just to the Glen Highway, but through the pass to both Indian and Bird Creek.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It would be a fantastic connection to get down the Seward Highway on a bike trail.
It would be great to have a trail just below Timberline across the face of the Chugach Mountains. Now, that would not be cheap, and it would have some pretty impressive bridges. The guys earlier were speaking of engineers wanting to build bridges, beautiful, graceful bridges to get across Campbell Creek or, McHugh Creek down on the Turnagain on the Johnson Trail above the Seward Highway. These are tasty projects for professional engineers and construction people. This is something that has always been Alaska's working bread and butter, is building roads and bridges and trails and runways and ferry facilities, dock facilities. Trails are just another part of that. It's part of the transportation grid and should be respected as such.
Well, I think already, in fairness, the Coastal Trail is like one of our great visitor attractions. I mean, they rent bicycles to people to get on that thing now.
Oh, yeah, and our former Uncle Ted, Senator Stevens, the late Senator Stevens, I think he got a $34 million appropriation to do that portion along the South Coast that would even reinforce the Western Bluff, where all those multi-million dollar houses were.
Mm-hmm.
And I once counted, there are like 220 privately owned lots on that bluff. And so, and I don't mean to be mean or nasty, but in effect, you've got 220 owners that can look out one side and see this wonderful wildlife refuge and then walk to the other side of their house and look across the street at just a small sampling of all the people they're effectively denying access to that wildlife refuge to.
Yeah.
And all the tourists and all the other Alaskans.
Well, as we both know, Tom, that that's been quite the sore point down through the years.
Yeah, it would draw tourists, as you said, and it's really a recreational trail, unlike the railway trail I was promoting earlier,
which could be a transportation corridor trail. Yes.
Yeah, but recreation is good for people. It
absolutely
lengthens lives and improves health.
Tom, I want to thank you so much for your call. That was beautiful.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Steve, and you have a great day. Good luck with your program. I really love listening to it.
All right. Well, thank you. It's Bike to Work Week, and we'd like to get folks from all over the state. Sitka has been very active in this issue, and we get a call from Carl and Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Carl.
Thank you very much. You know, I was raised in a very small ski jumping town in New Jersey, and we used to build a lot of ski trails so that we could ski when there's very little bit of snow. We'd get rid of the roots and the rocks and just make it so that, you know, we get 2 inches of snow, damn, we're out in the woods practicing for the Olympics. And I've done an extensive amount of landscaping throughout my life and also building sport fields. And it comes to mind that, you know, 100 years ago, canvas and hemp powered the world with sails and cordage and twine. And for us to develop hemp mats to lay down in rural areas or for more inexpensive construction that labor crews that not necessarily are using carbon products to make trails, I think we can explore, you know, industrial hemp fiber. For, you know, they erode, they blend back in with the environment, and it doesn't need to be pavement bike trails. Especially, you know, like here in Homer, we're trying to get a bike trail. How do we build it? How do we engineer it? How do we approve it? You know, something that's biological and organic, and if it wears out or wears thin, you could, you know, mix it with different sand and bed it in really nice so it's not going to tear up and it's just going to erode back into the environment. And, you know, we could cross little wetland areas and be beautiful for preventing soil shearing, which is what creates the erosion. So creating an industry building hemp trails might be beneficial here for Alaskans.
Carl, that's a gorgeous idea, and it might even be getting some traction, Carl.
No, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it, and I hope to see us build ecological and environmental bike trails over sensitive wetlands, and I think this is a direction that we can get away from making vinyl geocomposites that natural products can excel and be a lighter footprint on the planet.
Yeah, well, what we need is the demo project and the raw material with which to make it. So that's going to be
some political will.
We have to overcome a barrier or two policy-wise to get to that.
Yeah, our politicians, you know, anything with hemp has got a negative connotation when it was, you know, one of the most complex plants on the planet with so many applications and uses, and we limit its application in modern day because we have synthetic components that chemical companies like to produce, and I think we can get back into the greener, we can do it mentality with simple bike trails with hemp.
Thank you, Carl. Yeah, Carl from Homer there. Okay, let's go to Mike in Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mike.
Oh, great show today, Steve.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One, I worked in a bike shop in the 70s during the 70s bike boom and been an avid bicyclist since the 60s. So there was an article in Scientific American in, I believe it was 73, where they studied every form of transportation on the planet, like a fish swimming, a bird flying, a man walking, a man on a horse, etc. And based on a calorie expended for a meter of travel, a human on a bicycle is absolutely, bar none, the most efficient form of travel on the planet.
Mike, I think you've made that point before, but it's a great one.
Well, in about bike trails, I just wanted to be a little bit cautionary because I remember when the bike trails were put in Fairbanks, and they weren't put in very well, and after two winters, the frost heaves just made them almost unrideable.
Oy.
And that's not the only way for bikes to be on the road. And the other way is to have a wide shoulder, and the placement of the rumble strips has to be paramount. You know, you can't put the rumble strips so that it eats up the shoulder, because the rumble strips will protect bicyclists. And in other words, the bike trails are not the only answer for bicycles. They need to be included in all roadways, and this rails to trails is just spectacular. If you've ever been on one, they're just fantastic.
I've been very impressed
anyway,
with that.
I appreciate the work of the League of American Wheelmen, and I really appreciate the show. So thanks a lot, Steve.
All right. Thank you so much for your call from Kodiak as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fmbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Well, in 2005, Safe TILU was passed. It was shepherded through Congress, really, by our own Representative Don Young. And it contained money for four pilot projects in Columbia, Missouri, Marin County, California, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Sheboygan County, Wisconsin. In each of these communities, there was a concerted effort to try and beef up, to use considerable money, I think up to the $20 million level, but in many cases they leveraged it to more, to make more amenities for pedestrians and bicycles and everything. We're going to check in with one of those in just a moment. But first, let's go to Eric in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Eric.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, with all the construction this year at the new Seward Highway and there at Dowling, looks like commuters almost have a traffic-free or motorized-free commute. My question is, has there been any thought to the one remaining intersection there at Lake Otis and Campbell Park?
You got me. I don't get down there, so I'm not real. There's been a lot of changes in there.
Yeah, but it still remains one of the few spots where you cannot cross underneath the bridge or whatever, or underneath the traffic.
Yeah.
And remains one of the last bottlenecks for a complete Campbell Creek Trail.
Ah, yeah. Oh, that one. Yeah, well, I wonder, there might have been money, Eric, in the capital budget for that, because I know they've been angling for that for a while.
But I sure hope so.
Yeah, that would be nice. I know a lot of people are liking that Elmore down there.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. And, yeah. And then with this new construction, it's going to be, you know, everybody used to cross underneath the new Seward Highway there at the underneath the bridge. And
right.
Now that's going to be taken care of.
Good. All right. Well,
all right,
thanks, Eric.
You.
Yeah, kind of getting inside baseball and Anchorage design, but that's kind of what it takes sometimes. Okay, back to our next guest who joins us by telephone. From Marin County, it's Andy Perry, the Advocacy Director of the Marin County Bicycle Coalition. Andy, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Great. Thank you for having me on the show.
So, Andy, tell me what's your neighborhood like there in Marin?
Well, I was actually just at the U.S. Census Bureau website looking at the numbers and was surprised to find that Anchorage and Marin here have, in terms of population, very similar numbers, around in the neighborhood of 250,000. We are a little higher than we are. And so That's one similarity. I think there's a lot more differences in terms of the topography, geography, and climate and those kinds of things. But today we have a beautiful sunny day down here, and just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the projects that we're working on here, especially with respect to the pilot program money that you mentioned earlier in the show.
Right. Now, I understand you actually had to close out and do your final report, but I guess for you guys, this is totally not the end of the story because you've got one tunnel made and another tunnel you're hoping for.
So the report just went to Congress on this non-motorized transportation pilot program that is completed in terms of the program, but there's still funds out there that are being spent or in the process of being spent. The one project that funds did go into, it was a relatively small amount for the overall project, but one of them was the Cal Park Tunnel, and this is a tunnel that links two of our communities. The alternative before the tunnel was built was for cyclists to actually have to travel and cross a freeway on-ramp and off-ramp where cars are doing pretty much freeway speeds. It was a very hazardous and very circuitous route to get between two communities. This tunnel has now reduced that commute time or that ride time by about 15 to 20 minutes.
Wow. And I'm just blown away that bicycle people could actually be the propelling force to get a tunnel. Granted, you didn't actually get a tunnel punched through. That tunnel already existed. But, I mean, it needed considerable work before you could get a bike trail in there. And I guess eventually they'd like to run a railroad track through there as well.
Exactly. This tunnel is it's a historic tunnel built in the 1800s. It had at least two collapses inside of it. It was a major reconstruction of the tunnel, and like you said, it is for bicycles. And when the Smart Train, which is the Sonoma Marin area rail transit, that's a two county rail system that's being built right now as we speak. When that is eventually completed, there'll be trains going through this tunnel, so it'll be a shared tunnel. In fact, this tunnel actually, because they wanted to separate cyclists and pedestrians from the train, has a little mini tunnel within the tunnel to separate the two modes of transportation.
Wow. And how's it getting used? Are people liking it?
Yeah, a lot of people. It's interesting. You ask people living in the communities, have you been through the tunnel? And the most frequent response I get is, what tunnel? And so despite the fact that it's right there in people's community, a lot of people don't know about it. I even see really hardcore road riders that are in their Lycra outfits and everything, and they're taking the long way around still. So a lot more education to be done about that and increasing awareness about the facility.
That's amazing. Well, tell me, how did the pilot project work out? As you say, you're still spending the money, but have you seen this? We were talking about this commuter mode share. Can you show a change or a difference in that in Marin County because of the work of this program?
Yeah, there's been significant increase of ridership during the pilot program. Since the Marin County Bicycle Coalition started its work, we've seen 135% on weekdays and about 150% on weekends of increased people cycling. The numbers since this report was completed are in the neighborhood of around 70%. So there's been some significant increases of bike ped, so-called mode shift, that is people getting out of their cars and using other modes of transportation. And the purpose of the non-motorized transportation pilot program was just that, to get people to show how investment in bicycling and walking infrastructure and programs would help to shift people out of their cars and onto other modes of transportation. And I think it's important to note, I was just looking at the Anchorage Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. A lot of good work has been done there. I can't evaluate the whole thing. I don't live up there and don't know the details on the ground. But to the extent that there's a bike plan in place and to the extent that the state is spending the funds that are available, federal and state funds, if there are state funds available, and local and regional funds, to the extent that those are being spent, people feel more safe. And when people feel more safe, people are more likely to get out there and use, especially for the shorter trips, use bicycles or use their feet to get around.
Now, we're speaking with Andy Perry, the advocacy director of the Marin County Bicycle Coalition, where they had a pilot project to see what they could do about changing the design to encourage more bicycle and pedestrian use. Your grand vision, as I understand it, is to get a long bicycle corridor that will link up with a way into San Francisco.
Yeah, one of the original visions of our organization, which began in 1998, was to develop this so-called North-South Greenway. And I look at your bicycle pedestrian master plan. There's many North-South and East-West corridors that are probably considered the ideal ones. Some of the ones in your Anchorage bike plan are separated pathways, multi-use pathways. But in ours, we call it the North-South Greenway. And because it's a fairly urbanized. When I say urbanized, it's not like a city, like New York City, but it's suburban, urban kind of setting. There's lots of barriers, and one of the barriers happens to be hills. They're not mountains like what you guys have, but to the extent you can make the routes more flat by using tunnels, opening existing tunnels, it encourages more people to ride. So what we're doing is a series of bridges and tunnels to try to complete this so-called North-South Greenway. And this CalPark tunnel that we were just talking about was a key piece of that. There's a second tunnel, a second railroad tunnel, that we are seeking to have reopened as well, and that is being studied right now. There's a geotechnical study being done right now that is a study looking at the geology inside the tunnel. Actually, it hasn't started. It'll start next year, but it's funded through pilot program funding. So, you know, these many of the project elements are more costly, and many of them are very, very inexpensive. Sometimes it's just a matter of taking a little bit of asphalt and putting it in a flat area, and it's much more simple to do. But collectively, we're hoping to have from the southern border, which is the Golden Gate Bridge, to Sonoma County, sort of the wine country, to have this facility completed. And with this smart train, the Sonoma Marin Area Rail Transit train that is being built, that's going to complete significant portions of it because along with that train project, that rail project is a pathway facility. That was part of the initiative that voters voted on in 2008.
Andy, you told me that you're born and raised in Marin, and I'm wondering how you personally are feeling about this. Obviously, you've been advocating for it, but I mean, are you actually feeling like you're living in a better place to live now than you were when this started?
I mean, I live in an unbelievably beautiful area, and I have to say, growing up, I was very reluctant to ride my bicycle on the road. I would ride in the mountain where there weren't cars. Now, bicycle commuting, I mean, I work at home, but I mean, I do a lot of meetings out through the county, and I ride my bike to many of them. And I feel more and more comfortable because I know I have sort of refuges. When there's bike lanes, it's a refuge for a bicyclist. When there's completely separated pathways, I feel very, very safe. Some of the most dangerous areas in Marin now have alternative routes. Some of the most dangerous routes have alternative routes, which are totally separated facilities so that you don't have to tango with fast-moving cars or dangerous intersections or whatever. So in terms of non-motorized transportation, the county has never been better, and we seek to make it far better than it is now.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Andy.
It's my great pleasure, and I want to, for the bike ped organizations up in your area, I want to encourage them to continue doing the great work they're doing to make Anchorage a great place to cycle to. I know that, again, you have good separated multi-use facilities up there and bike lane projects and a bike plan. So the more that gets implemented, the better it's going to be for people of Anchorage as well.
Yeah, for this city in Anchorage, I think we have some really fabulous resources, but we're kind of lacking in the commute corridors yet, and that's kind of where the work needs to go. I mean, you know, it's one thing to twist and turn around and, you know, make your way around skateboarders and little kids and so forth and peppies, but it's another to want to get back and forth to work on a good, solid surface that's not too bumpy.
Yeah. Well, that's a great challenge, and for the organizations working up there, there's funds to be spent, and if they don't get spent in Anchorage, they're going to be spent somewhere else. So even for people with an ethic that the government shouldn't be paying for this or that, I think it's critical to understand, and I make the point here as well, spend it here or it's going to be spent somewhere else. And so I encourage people to find the federal money that is already available and use it to make your community more safe for bikes and for bicyclists and for pedestrians.
All right, Andy, best of luck in that second tunnel there.
Thank you so much.
I hope the geotechnical comes out good.
I do too as well. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. Let's go to Tom, joins the program from Homer. Thanks for your patience, Tom.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I think one thing that might go over good would be an elevated clear glass plastic tube above the traffic. And then you'd have off and on ramps at various places to get on it. And another advantage, you'd have clean air, and it'd be filtered in the system. And this type of system could even be expanded for moving people and goods. So it's got a possibility of providing all types of transportation or needs.
Well, that would be high tech.
Yeah.
That might solve that problem they have here in the University Med District, where they you have all these wonderful ski trails that are bringing forth Olympic quality athletes, and then you got people working at the hospital and living out in Eagle River. They have a it's not real good for them to get to work. They have to kind of go around.
Yeah, nobody likes to go along the road where it's dusty and it's hard to breathe and bad air. So this system could have a lot of advantages.
Wow, I love the big ideas, Tom. As you know, thanks for your call from Homer. It's Talk of Alaska. Here's Tom from Fairbanks saying, in addition to not maintaining what we have, large cracks completely across a path are left for years. Several years ago, when the Parks Highway near Esther was redone, the State Transportation Department took a large chunk of money from the bike path and put it into the road work, saying the bike path base had been over-engineered and was not needed. A year later, says Tom, the bike path was already falling apart. I don't think this attitude is going to change until younger engineers work their way up into the management of DOT. That's that institutional situation we were discussing earlier, I guess. Steve and Juno, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, hi. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Steve. I always enjoy your show. I have about 30 years' experience in commuting to work by bicycle, 20 years in Southern California, and now 10 years here in Juneau. And what I've noticed is bicycle to work successfully, you need support at the workplace. There has to be a place to change your clothes and hopefully a shower rather than taking a sponge bath. And
I'm glad you brought that up, because mostly what we're talking about, people are talking about being worried that it's not safe, that you got safety concerns and so forth. But this is a very significant one. I mean, a person, needs to look a certain way at work, and that's not necessarily what you're going to look like when you're riding a bike.
Yeah, personally, I've had experience with my coworkers making comments that my workspace would smell because of my bicycling clothes. I actually have some of my bicycling clothes taken away and thrown away in the garbage. And what I'm saying is that you have to have support at the workplace to be able to bicycle work successfully.
Yeah. Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's just kind of your ongoing struggle, too.
But I've always enjoyed it because it's like a cup of coffee in the morning. It wakes you up, so when you get to work, you're refreshed. And also at the end of the day, you can look forward to your bicycle back home, and that's also refreshing, and you can kind of shed off all the workplace stress that way.
I agree. I mean, it's totally the attitude adjustment. It's the attitude adjustment coming into work, too. You know, for me, at 5 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and right now, it couldn't be better. You know, all the birds and all. Just a great time.
Right, very true. But what I noticed, and I had 20 years' experience bicycling in Southern California to work, which was all year long was perfectly suitable for bicycle commuting to work, but only a very small percentage of workers, and I was at places that had more than 2,000 employees, would bicycle to work. I'd say it was probably less than 5% of people were commuting to work by bicycle, even if it was very easy to do. And that's part of the culture in the U.S., obviously, especially in Southern California, is the car culture.
Oh, yeah. And surely there's design issues there as well. I will say this, the ConocoPhillips building in Anchorage, have you seen that recently?
Yes.
You see how many bikes are parked in front of that in the summertime?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is impressive.
I'm wondering they probably do provide some facilities. I mean, basically what I've watched is that they've had to put more and more bike racks in around that building. But I'll bet you also internally they provide for some of these issues you're talking about, here you can change your clothes here and like that.
Right. The other issue that's important is for the community to have a bicycle advocate in the city government, because the maintenance of the bike lanes and bike paths is an issue, especially in Alaska with the gravel that's put down during the winter, and also repainting the bike lane stripes after the winter snow.
Yeah, yeah, you got that one right. Steve, thanks for your call from Juneau.
Sure, thanks, Steve. Bye.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by Providence Imaging Center, with three locations, including its newest center in Soldotna, offering CT scans, MRI, and digital X-rays to residents on the Kenai Peninsula. Learn more at provimaging.com.
Well, it's Bike to Work Week, and Bike to Work Day, by the way, is Friday. But some people are doing it all week long, and some people do it all the time or as much as they can. And that's kind of been the subject here on Talk of Alaska. Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255. Still got a few minutes to get your call in, 1-800-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. We already checked in with Marin County, where they've punched through one tunnel for bicycles, and they're working on another one as part of a federal pilot project money that went out to four different communities across the country. Would have loved to check in with each of them and see if they had as much success as they did in Marin. But I did run across this one in my researchers in Alameda County, which I think is also in the Bay Area. They are, the bicycle advocates there are campaigning for a bond issue of a total $7.8 billion. And the price for their support is that they get 11% of that for their bicycle pedestrian transit amenities. But if they get to $8 billion, that's considerable spending and considerable design that can be done with that type of capital money. Earlier we had a call from Tom, who talked about the railroad corridor and the possibility of getting access to that for bicycles. You'd have to do some barriers and stuff like that. It would not be cheap, he said, but he's been pushing it for many years. And he then went on to discuss the coastal trail and the fact that it kind of stops now at Kincaid Park, but there's a whole part that originally was supposed to continue to go on down Turnagain Arm. And what has stopped it, he said, is the property owners along the bluff that don't want that trail down below them. But Emerson tells us that those homeowners on the bluffs worked hard to get those homes, and building a trail means taking what they have from them. There are absolutely beautiful trails that we have access to here in Anchorage. We already have some of the most beautiful trails in the world, and that's true. We could take the property from the bluff owners. We could go around the state and take every beautiful view from every landowner, but it's not good practice, and the cost will not be measured in just dollars. The bluffs were developed long before anyone had an interest in building bike trail along it. It's not as if they build their homes to block access, but instead to fully enjoy it. If we want access, we should build a boardwalk out down below rather than taking private property. And I will throw in, Emerson, that I remember when they were originally considering the coastal trail, that was the first design that they looked at, and I think there were some drawbacks. I'm not an expert on this, but I think there were some drawbacks that made them realize that it wasn't going to work, but I'm not entirely sure what it was. So that's our situation there. Just to refresh your memory, in case you weren't listening in the earlier part of the program, the state of Alaska has millions of dollars available to it specifically for bicycles and pedestrians and other what they call enhancements, which it hasn't spent. Under the Safe Routes to Schools program, it had, ever since 2005, $8 million available to it, and it's spent 1.5 so far. Certainly there's a constituency, but certainly also there are a number of schools where probably kids would like a safer route. Let's go to Terry, joins the program in Fairbanks.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good, thanks. I'm a year-round biker.
Yeah.
And I've talked to DOT some, and I live a ways out of Fairbanks, out in Goldstream Valley, so it's, you know, 12 and a half miles downtown.
Whoa.
So I don't expect the state to invest in bike trails all the way out here. But a huge difference would be if they would maintain the shoulders of roads. They generally, in the summer, allow large amounts of gravel, especially from the winter, to pile up on the shoulders, making it very hard to ride on the shoulders. And then in winter, you know, they never plow the shoulders. And so a lot of the time you're forced to ride out in the car lanes, and the cars don't really appreciate that.
They don't. So, but, you know, if you were in France, you have the right of way, actually, as a bicycle.
Well,
right now, by according to state law.
You know, but, you're supposed to slow down for slower moving bikes, but I don't feel like challenging cars.
Who would?
Yeah. But, you know, I think that would be such a cheaper way, perhaps, for the. I mean, when they put in bike trails that go a ways out, then they don't clear them in the winter. So that's almost pointless. But I don't think it would cost them that much to maintain the shoulders.
At least on one side, please. Thanks, Terry, for your call from Fairbanks.
And the other thing they could do when they repair roads and put in new surfaces, they tend these days to leave the shoulders very rough. And I'm sure that saves money, but it would be really nice if they'd make them smooth instead.
Terry and Fairbanks, hang in there. Thanks
a
lot.
I don't know how you get that thinking through.
I don't either.
I think it would save DOT. I mean, to encourage people to bike, save them money, right?
You have nothing but my admiration up there. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
It's Talk of Alaska. We've been talking about two-wheel transportation, people-powered transportation. Thanks so much for listening. Next week, our subject is the unusual mortality event that has been hitting our marine mammals, a number of different ones. Thanks so much to Dave Waldron, engineering the program today, and Josh Edge on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska, pebblepartnership.com.
And by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.